If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
It's a heat wave outside today.
I know. I'm liking this.
Like a heat wave.
Highs in the mid-40s.
Burning in my heart.
We may... Are you
I said like a heat wave. What were you saying, PJ Off?
I'll get out my magic marker here and draw on the blackboard. I was going to say a high today in the 40s, maybe 50 tomorrow.
Yep.
Yes, sir.
So what's up with there? Why are you wearing your winter coat?
Because I was cold.
You have
earlier.
Your parka on.
I do not have my parka on. It's a lightweight down jacket. It's not a parka.
I'm sweating just looking at you.
We all commented, every single person, what's up with Schwani in the coat today?
Engineer Bob had a hat on and a jacket himself. So, you know.
Here's what I noticed. You seem to be trolling the hallways today.
Oh, well, that's because I was
usually you're busy in the newsroom. Because you're busy running a newsroom.
I'm busy running a newsroom. Well, actually,
is that what you have to say? You've been like walking around all over the office.
Our news director is here today,
looking for.
So the newsroom is, you know,
he's been going through people's desks looking for pretzels, paper clips.
I happened to go
change.
Walk by your desk to get a cup of coffee.
Always nice to see you, by the way.
Oh, gee, thanks.
It is. I enjoy when you come back and we have a little chat, usually.
I know, we do, and then when we get on the air, you make fun of me.
But here's the thing. I noticed that you were stopped by and bothering everybody, which you don't usually do.
He was taking attendance to see who was here.
Oh, Okay. I don't want to discourage you.
Isn't it time for the commercial break now?
I just noticed that... You're like a bear coming out of hibernation. You've got your gigantic fur coat on.
It's not a big coat, and there's no fur on this.
It's like a big fur coat, and he's lumbering around the office. Boom, boom.
It's
boom,
Cortex.
Boom. Does somebody have paper clips I can take? Boom, boom.
Andy was looking for a stapler earlier.
Yeah. Oh.
Did you find it?
I did, yes.
Okay.
The traffic department was hoarding the stapler. Yeah.
So, all right. So, it's time for the commercial now, isn't it?
Maybe.
Newsroom to run and your show to run, Dean.
That's correct.
We in such a hurry.
You can't make fun of me.
You got time to walk all over the office. You don't have time for that chitty chatter. Good morning, everybody, and thank you for joining us this morning. How about this for a little swinging song to start our show today?
Jazzy.
Do you know who this is, Schwani? You're a big jazz head.
That is from the album Dave Digs Disney. It's Dave Brubeck, Paul Desmond, Joe Morello on drums, and Eugene Wright on bass.
Could you be more specific?
It is hi-ho, hi-ho. It's off to work we go.
The Dwarfs Marching Song.
Yeah.
I heard this song for the first time this week. And was a little
this version of it?
This version of hi-ho.
You haven't heard this before?
Mm-mm.
Oh.
Mm-mm. my friend. It's a swinging little version of the Disney song.
It really is. Yep.
And it, you know, like it fits the first spot in the show today. Hi-ho, hi-ho. It's off to work we go. Because we're like the three dwarfs.
three dwarfs or three...
Mopes.
Other people.
No, mopes is the best word to describe it.
Mopes.
I think that was our band that we were trying to get together.
That was our boy band.
Three mopes.
This album is very cool.
Dave Digs Disney, yeah.
Where he does like classic Disney songs. Give a little whistle. Yeah. Morning Jazz on WGN.
Now that is straight ahead swing, my friend.
Yeah, that's cool.
Oh, that rhythm section. Joe Morello and Eugene Wright.
Those guys.
Wow.
Yeah, this is, that's pretty, that's mighty swinging. Oh, listen, there's...
That's Paul Desmond.
Paul Desmond. If you don't know Dave Brubeck, you probably know the song Take Five. Classic. I think it was a number one song when it came out, right?
It well eventually became a number one song, yes.
But that's Dave Brubeck and Paul Desmond and basically the same band.
Yeah, well, it is the same band. Yeah. And there's an interesting story. They got done recording that album. It was all set to go.
This one?
No, the one with Take Five on Time Out. And Columbia Records said, we don't think this is going to sell, so we're not going to release it.
Yeah, record company geniuses.
Well, they eventually did, and look what happened.
No.
So.
How about this? How cool is this?
When You Wish Upon a Star.
Yeah. Jiminy Cricket just hanging out, having a smoke. In a smoke-filled jazz club. You know, this was the very first Disney song to ever win an Oscar, this song.
Huh. I did not know that.
A little trivia.
From Snow White, maybe?
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, Snow. Yeah, that's Snow White. She was a groovy chick, man. Wasn't she the one that fell asleep and Handsome Prince had to come and kiss her?
She had some apples.
That would be very inappropriate.
So
today,
among the dwarfs,
some stranger shows up and just kisses a woman who's sleeping.
If we're going to be dwarfs, are you going to be grumpy?
Are we allowed to say dwarfs anymore?
It's Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
Yeah, I know it, but...
But no, probably not.
Aren't we supposed to change it to Snow White and the Seven Little People? Or... I don't know what the correct... I'm very bad with all, like, pronouns and all that stuff. Yeah, whatever.
Play some more of that album.
Yeah, not my problem. Hey, you know what my favorite thing to do every Sunday morning before we start the show? Naturally, it's to come and chat with Shawnee and Andy, which I didn't have time to do.
No, I noticed that you did not come into the newsroom this morning.
A little bit late this morning. But normally, what I love doing to start the show is my new favorite thing, reading Steve and Johnny's texts.
Oh, nice.
From their show. Because, you know, our text line is a continuous text line. So, you know, whatever texts come in during this show, anybody can read it, you know, who has access to our text line. So, you know, everybody's, Lisa's texts are on there and... John Landecker and Bob Surratt, everybody's, but Steve and Johnny, I always try to figure out what they might have been talking about.
Okay.
That solicited some of these texts that have come in. And, you know, they have a thing where, you know, you text in where you're calling from, because there's always a lot of people on here saying where they're calling from. They talked about Jerry Butler, who passed away the other day, because he visited on their all-night show. But here's an interesting one. Can you recommend what to do with a face account for someone who has died?
Oof.
What do you do? And then I started thinking about that. If I croak, what happens to my Facebook? Like, what happens to it?
You know, the weirdest part about that is just the other day, actually a couple days ago, there was a birthday that came up on mine of someone that I knew had passed away several years ago. And there's still people that must have it automated that are wishing him a happy birthday.
Mm.
And I don't know if that's still, you know, something you should do or whatever, if someone's monitoring his account.
Yeah, I don't
but
know.
It's strange when that happens.
I've seen that happen, too. And I've also had friend requests from people that are no longer
with
us.
That are passed away?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Don't accept that one.
Nope.
You might be getting a message from the great beyond. Maybe you should answer it.
I'll get a message, all right.
You'll get a message from beyond that a prince in Nigeria just needs $10,000.
I've had that message, too.
Yeah, I don't know what you do. I guess I have had that happen a couple of times. A friend had passed away, and then I see their Facebook accounts. It's like, does it just go on in perpetuity, or can somebody else shut it down? Yeah, I mean, I don't know. You know the password, I guess.
Yeah.
You could, of course, shut it down, but if you don't know the password, I don't know. Anybody?
You might be able to get an answer between now and the end of the show.
I imagine. I imagine somebody must. Well, I don't know. When did this come in on the Steve and Johnny show? I'm just going to try to recreate Steve and Johnny's show. This came in at 1 o'clock in the morning last night, so I don't know. I don't know what the answer is to that. Juan, do you want to give me your password in case anything happens to you?
No.
I know your password is I love Dean 123.
How do you spell nyuk, nyuk, nyuk?
It's N-Y-N-U-K.
Mayberry 123. coming up on the show today, we've got... I'm going to go back because... Today's the anniversary of when the stage musical, The Producers, was here in the Chicago area with, you know, Mel Brooks's fantastic musical, still a record-breaking Broadway production, Tony Award-winning Broadway production with Nathan Lane, Matthew Broderick, and the whole gang. One of the best theatrical experiences that we've had here in Chicago, but... It was in the year 2001, February 2001, that played here in Chicago. I want to say it was over at the Cadillac Palace Theater. I don't remember exactly, but I'm pretty sure it was the Cadillac. And we had great sit-down interviews with the whole cast. My favorite amongst them all, Mr. Mel Brooks. So we're going to share that interview today.
Did he talk about the original movie? You know, that led up to the musical?
Yeah, because the play hadn't opened yet.
Yeah.
The musical hadn't opened yet. So, you know, I asked about, you know, is this kind of risky? You're taking this classic motion picture with, who was it, Zero Mostel
and Gene Wilder.
And Gene Wilder. You're taking this and you're readapting it now for a new medium, for the stage, with songs. And, you know, how do you feel about that? Working, and he did talk about that in the interview, and he talked about the importance of Roger Ebert and Gene Siskel of the Sun-Times and Tribune, respectively, making the movie The Producers a success. A lot of people wouldn't give it the time of day, and Siskel and Ebert both loved it, and you know, based on that, the film went on to great success. So Mel Brooks talks about all that. He's hilarious in this interview as well.
When isn't he hilarious, you know?
How old is he now?
95? 96?
Bless him.
Well, he and Carl Reiner were about the same age. Mm-hmm. And Carl Reiner was mid-90s or so when he passed away. So
those guys, Reiner, Mel Brooks, Dick Van Dyke. I mean, they're, you know... They're Iron Man.
Yeah. Yeah, they are.
Get this. Mel Brooks, 98 years old.
98, mm-hmm. Huh? There you go.
98 years old.
Unbelievable.
Wow. I remember going to the opening of that, and then they had a big cast party, which they invited me to, which was super nice. And I spent quite a bit of time talking with Anne Bancroft, Mel Brooks's wife, who was delightful. I had spent quite a bit of time talking to Sarah Jessica Parker, Matthew Broderick's wife. She was delightful. And, of course, to Matthew Broderick and to Nathan Lane and the whole cast and Mel Brooks. You know, I went up to Mel Brooks to congratulate him after the show. Oh, Mel, congratulations. The show was, you know, fantastic. I loved it. Oh, and he said, thank you. You know, he's shaking my hand, and then he takes both of his hands and puts them, like, on my cheeks, on my face. thank you so much. And thank you. He's slapping my face. I'm like, I don't care, Mel Brooks.
It's Mel Brooks.
Mel Brooks is giving
me likes
face me. Slapping. I loved it. Sweet. He's such a sweet guy. So that's coming up a little bit later on the show today. What else? We have Dr. Jeremy Silver. I'll be talking health today. And Shawnee has been reporting on the health of the Pope. So we're going to talk, not specifically because we don't really know the details about the Pope's case, but we know what he may be suffering with right now, which, you know, diseases. So we can talk about those in a general sense of what the Pope may be going through. Pope had a restful night, I think I heard you say, right?
Yes, a restful night, but he does remain in critical condition, basically faced with double pneumonia. Mm. And he has had a respiratory problem for many, many years.
Part of his lung taken
yes,
out?
Yes, when he was a younger man, he had a part of a lung removed. Not really sure what the deal was with that, but he did have part of a lung removed and so has had breathing issues and has been undergoing treatment for this prior to this latest time. Yeah. So he remains in the hospital. They're saying now that he'll be there for at least another week, but he is in critical condition and is receiving high oxygen levels.
What is he, like 85?
He's 88.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, we'll keep you posted on specifically on the story of the Pope, but we'll talk in a general sense about those conditions with Dr. Jeremy Silver in a couple of minutes. And also, Shawnee, this text in from the 847, Dean, it's pronounced dwarves, not dwarfs.
Ah, with a V.
Yeah.
Plural. Right. Okay.
Dean, it's dwarves, not dwarfs.
Be nice.
Thank you.
Be nice.
Thank you for that correction.
Be nice.
We appreciate that. Time for everyone's favorite, the far-flung forecast. Here now is your host on Ham and Rye, Dave Schwann.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Dean, and good morning, everyone. Boy, oh boy, you're going to need your compasses and protractors and newfangled devices today.
I've got mine ready.
We are going very, very far to Siberia.
What?
To Yakutsk, Siberia.
Okay, once again,
it's spelled.
He makes most of these names.
He does.
Yakutsk.
What's it called?
Yakutsk.
Yakutsk.
Yakutsk. Yakutsk in Russia. And it is now interesting that it's a growing city now, a population of 355,000 right now. Yeah. But we mentioned...
Are those Yakutians?
No, Yakutskians. Yakutskians would be the citizens of the city. Founded in 1632 by the Cossacks. But we are mentioning this because, well, we've had some cold weather, and with February, by and large, below normal temperature-wise around here in Chicago, but nothing like Yakutsk gets. It's one of the coldest cities in the world. And what?
Yakutsk
gets. Nothing like Yakutsk gets.
It's nothing like that. It is minus 24 there.
Ooh, baby.
Right now. And it is actually tomorrow because they're 15 hours ahead of us in Chicago. So it's Monday morning early, but a minus 24. Their average annual temperature can be 8 below in the winter. That's the average temperature. Yes. So, you know.
Fahrenheit.
Yes. Yeah. So we, we've had our cold weather, but nothing like Yakutsk gets.
Everybody try to work that in the conversation sometimes.
Minus 24 in Yakutsk.
Yeah, where are you going? I'm going to the Jewel in Yakutsk. Happy Sunday morning to you. Thank you for being here with us. Time for the week in health. What's going on to keep you on the healthy side this week? For that, we go to Dr. Jeremy Silver, who is the medical director, emergency medicine, Northwestern's Kishwaukee Hospital. Dr. Silver, welcome. Nice to have you back with us.
Good morning, Dean. Thanks for having me.
The big story this morning is the condition of the Pope. It's been the lead story. What can you tell us about the what the Pope is going through? He's hospitalized, apparently has pneumonia in both lungs. His condition is being described as a complex clinical picture. What can you tell us about the, not about his specific case, but about the pneumonias and the kinds of things that have put the Pope in the hospital?
Sure. Well, my heart goes out to the guy, just complicated by nature of being 88 years old as he is and in the hospital, definitely creates a lot of concerns and definitely can make things complicated. We know that that Pope Francis was hospitalized last week for bronchitis. That's an infection of the upper airways or the tubes that carry the air down into the sacs of the lungs. And then we learned, as you mentioned, that he had developed a polymicrobial, that just means many organisms or more than one organism, infection of the respiratory tract. So when we think about the respiratory tract, we think about the upper part of the respiratory tract. That's like your sinuses and your throat. And then the lower respiratory tract, and that's the airways that carry the oxygen out into your lungs, which are a series of sacs that allow that oxygen to then pass into your bloodstream. And so initially, it's very common to develop a sort of a bronchitis-type picture where you get inflammation of those airway passages that then turns into or becomes a pneumonia where the sacs or those little air sacs in the lungs become filled with pus or bacteria or viruses. And so then things can get very serious very quickly, and there's just a host of complications, one of which being just being elderly in and of itself lends itself to difficulty fighting off disease. Your chest wall muscles aren't as strong. Those are sort of part of the primary immune system when you have pneumonia to cough out the illness, whether it's a virus or a bacteria or even a fungus. And then older people may not present with classic symptoms of pneumonia, which you think of as fever, shortness of breath, cough. Some folks may just present with confusion, and that may delay diagnosis. And then, of course, as you age, your immune system is not what it once was, and you don't fight off disease as well. Your immune cells or the soldiers of your immune system are weaker. And then lastly, we know that this individual, the Pope, was hospitalized for pneumonia previously and had it so severe at the time he apparently had to have a portion of his lung removed. So you've got a lot of factors here at play, and things can kind of spiral quickly. So it is very concerning.
Yeah, the fact that he had a portion of his lung removed as a younger man, does that make this more difficult for him to recover from the pneumonia that with which he is living now?
Well, yes, because the lungs basically take oxygen from the ambient air and pass it into your bloodstream. And so if you're missing a section of lung, your ability to utilize oxygen becomes less. And so if you're having the rest of your good lung that remains fighting off infection or filled with virus or bacteria and immune cells, there's not a lot of tissue left to do the work of breathing. And that's where other things come into play, like mechanical ventilation, where sometimes they'll put in a breathing tube to help you breathe, or there are certain specialty devices that can be applied from the external of the patient to deliver oxygen at a high flow rate. So there's a lot of different treatment options, but it kind of depends on what's happening with the patient.
Yeah, they did say that he had rested comfortably overnight, but was on external oxygen as well. So that kind of jives with what you're talking about of trying to get more oxygen in that he might not be able to do on his own at this point.
Yeah, the other thing that I had read, Dean, was something referencing asthma. So if he does have an underlying condition, some people think of asthma like COPD. They're kind of in the same ballpark of disease where for a variety of reasons, either your own immune system or from smoking, you develop a reactivity, and so you get inflammation of the airways very quickly. And so anytime you get sick with an upper respiratory or lower respiratory infection, you can develop an asthma attack, if you will, or a COPD exacerbation, as it's called, and that can complicate things as well.
So treatment for something like this, I mean, normally what I've always heard is when somebody has pneumonia, they put them on antibiotics right away. And usually that, you know, takes care of it within a few days or a week. Is that the case for something like this? Or because of his age and some other mitigating factors, would there be more to it than that?
Well, there could. Of course, as you mentioned, there's antibiotics for a variety of pneumonias. We've heard of the walking pneumonia, the mycoplasma pneumonia. There's an antibiotic for that. And, of course, strep pneumonia has multiple antibiotics that we can use. And even some of the viruses, like COVID-19 or influenza, have antivirals. But we also worry about those bacteria getting into the bloodstream and causing something called sepsis, which can become rapidly fatal. So there's a variety of considerations there. You know, pneumonia, it's kind of sounds like one of these diseases people, quote, unquote, get. But, you know, 1 million adults are hospitalized for pneumonia every year, and about a third of those that are hospitalized will be gone within a year. They'll die. So it's a very, very serious disease. The other factor that I'd like to point out is that there is a prevention that's available, and that is the vaccine. So the influenza vaccine is available to patients 6 months and older, the flu shot. And then, of course, there's a pneumococcal vaccine for the strep pneumonia, and that's available for adults 50 and older. And then the CDC recommends adults 75 and older, as well as some who are over 60 who are at increased risk for the RSV, obtain the RSV vaccine. And those vaccines can help, if they don't prevent the disease, they can help make it a lot less severe.
Would prednisone have been part of a treatment for the conditions with which the Pope is living with right now?
It certainly could. In fact, we use prednisone in pneumonia not infrequently to help with some of the excessive inflammation. The immune system is helpful because it does fight off disease, but it can actually get overreactive and then attack the person themselves, which we think of when we think of the COPD exacerbation or the asthma or something called bronchospasm, where the airways just get so inflamed from all of the viral or bacterial particles that they start to close up. And so prednisone is a great antidote to that, and it's often given in conjunction with antivirals or antibiotics.
Yeah, somebody on our text line it was asking because they noticed that his physical appearance seems to have been a little larger than it had been normally. And I know that when people are on prednisone, sometimes there is a swelling or a puffiness that occurs as a result of that.
Yeah, great observation. People also get copious fluids when they're in the hospital and sick with pneumonia, and so that may also be playing a role.
All right, well, we'll keep our prayers open for the Pope. He is an extraordinary person. Pope Francis remaining hospitalized, had a restful night, according to the Vatican. And we'll keep you posted as we hear any changes in his condition. When we come back with Dr. Silver, the measles outbreak seems to not be going away here in the U.S. Let's talk about that next. 9:52, The Week in Health, with Dr. Jeremy Silver, Northwestern's Kishwaukee Hospital. So this measles outbreak started kind of isolated, but it is spreading around the United States. I know it is in Illinois, but in the state of Texas, it seems to be unusually explosive, right?
Largest outbreak in 30 years in the state of Texas is what I understand, and I think they've reached 90 cases so far. And they think that that number is probably going to continue to rise for some time.
What about here in Illinois? Is that something that we should be concerned with? Should parents be concerned with their kids? Back in the day, we all had measles vaccinations. Does that make us safe from it? Or, you know, because we had it such a long time ago, do we need to talk to our doctors about getting revaccinated?
Yes, I think everybody needs to be worried about measles as the vaccination rates have gone down. These outbreaks are going to become more and more common. You know, when 95% of the community has the vaccine, at least one dose, you have something called herd immunity, where it just makes it incredibly difficult due to statistics for these outbreaks to occur. But when that immunity drops, you've got a problem. And, you know, in terms of the vaccine, you know, even if you just have one dose, that's helpful. Two doses, you get up to, I think, 97% effectiveness against the virus. Now, you mentioned, should somebody get revaccinated? Anyone who was vaccinated before 1968, yes, they should get at least one dose of the live attenuated vaccine to bring them up to speed. Mm. And anybody after that point, if they've only had one dose, they should get a second. But those that have had two are fully immune and in good shape.
All right, something to talk to the doctor about. I'm pretty sure I was a pre-1968 measles vaccination kid back then. You had talked about flu and COVID vaccines with regard to the Pope. Lots of people on our text line asking about this morning. Somebody from 847 is saying, can you ask the doctor if there is a need for a second dose of the COVID-19 vaccine?
Yeah, what I would say is it's all very dependent on when you had your last dose. And so the best thing that you can do is take your vaccination card and get to your primary care doctor. These are the folks that are so good at tracking and monitoring all the vaccines and the timing and also personalizing those vaccines to your individual health status. But it's a great idea to stay on top of that because many people are up for a booster at this point in time.
630 area code. My husband had both COVID and influenza A at one time. Is that common?
It is. You know, we used to think one virus at a time. And I think the pandemic kind of blew that out of the water as far as our understanding of viruses. And so, yes, it's very common to have both or some, you know, in some cases we've seen three viruses, particularly in kids as they're being exposed to these pathogens for the first time. So, yeah, not unusual to see it. I'm sorry that happened. I hope he's doing better.
847 area code. I was born in 1947, had the polio vaccine in grade school, polio vaccine now, which, by the way, today is the anniversary of the first dose of polio vaccine. I think it was 1954, before my time. But how revolutionary that was, right, doctor, that after so many people had suffered with polio, that suddenly there was a vaccine and completely changed the game on that.
I mean, a great example of like you say, completely changing a disease that was totally debilitating and widely impactful in terms of the paralysis and even death from the disease. And now it's just so rare, at least in areas of the world where the vaccine is available. So, yeah. great story of public health.
Yeah. So, if somebody had, like our texter, had the polio vaccine when they were in grade school, do they need to get another? Do you need to get revaccinated for that?
You know, Dean, it may depend on the vaccine that they've had. I'm not a specialist, and I'm not up to speed on polio, so I don't want to give misinformation. What I would recommend, again, is talk to your primary care doctor, or sometimes the CDC website has good information related to this type of thing.
Yeah, somebody from 847 makes an observation. With spring break approaching, so many students will be traveling south to Mexico and to Texas, where the measles are a little bit out of control right now. So, I mean, are there precautions people can take if they are traveling to areas where the measles are more predominant than here?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, I think I would stay away from areas where there's been an outbreak personally. But if that's not possible, those droplet masks are very helpful to prevent spread of disease. And certainly, if you come across somebody with fever and a rash, I would keep my distance.
708 area code, what is the time frame for receiving pneumococcal vaccines?
And I'm going to guess they're asking how old do I need to be? And typically it's 50, and those over 50 are eligible. But in terms of whether those get redosed, I don't know off the top of my head, and I, again, would point them to the CDC website or to their primary care doctor.
Pneumococcal vaccine, is that the pneumonia vaccine?
Correct. Okay. Correct.
All right, just under a different name. So there you go with that. Here's 630. If I got an MMR shot when I was a kid, do I need another?
Yeah, so the MMR is the measles, mumps, and rubella, and it's a two-dose vaccine. So typically the first dose you get about a year, and then another dose at 4 to 6 years. And so if you only had one dose, it's definitely recommended to get a second.
Is it too late to get a flu and COVID vaccine? I'm going to guess the answer
not at all.
Is no. Yeah, absolutely not.
Not at all. Go for it.
Dr. Jeremy Silver, Medical Director, Emergency Medicine, Northwestern's Kishwaukee Hospital. Always a pleasure, Doc. Have a great day today. Thank you.
Take care. Thanks, Dean.
Did you say 31 degrees?
32 at O'Hare, 33 at Midway, 31 at the lake.
Nice.
Yes. Put the AC on, huh?
May have to put my tank top on today.
Any golf courses open today?
Warning my neighbors.
Well, I would imagine there might be some open. Some of the dedicated golfers that are out and around.
Warning my neighbors, I could be running around in shorty shorts.
a tank. Yes, please do warn them.
Hide your children. Could get ugly. I'll let your head hung down. The great Jerry Butler, who we lost Thursday night, died at his home here in Chicago. And had been living with Parkinson's disease since 2019. What a pioneer. What a guy. First starting off as the lead singer of The Impressions, then going off on a solo career of his own with songs like this, Only the Strong Survive, For Your Precious Love, Make It Easy on Yourself. The list goes on and on of fantastic songs. Jerry Butler, the Iceman, member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, 3-time Grammy nominee. He was, 85 years old. What a distinctive voice, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And that's part of the whole thing.
Yeah. One of a number of terrific Chicago-based singers here.
Yeah, always true.
People like Gene Chandler and Jerry Butler.
Yeah. After his, well, kind of concurrent, really, with his music career, he got involved in politics and became a Cook County commissioner.
Right.
For multiple terms. He was in office on the Cook County board for quite a long time, really. Talk about somebody who walked the walk and gave back to the community. Quite a guy, the Iceman.
Did you ever get to talk with him at all?
Yeah.
Did you?
On the show several times.
Yeah.
For several reasons during the years. It was a Philadelphia DJ that gave him the nickname the Iceman.
Yeah, I always wondered how that came about.
Because it was a Philadelphia DJ named Georgie Woods.
Keeping you company on a Sunday morning.
Yeah, Georgie Woods. That's Jerry Butler. He's so smooth and so cool. I'm going to call him the Iceman.
He's just like ice.
He's smooth and cool. I'm going to call him the Iceman.
That's a cool nickname.
Right?
I don't remember him being called that necessarily when, you know, songs like Only the Strong Survive were hits.
In the Cook County meetings, Cook County board meetings, the chair recognizes Iceman. Yeah, I guess I mean, I've always heard him. When he was introduced as anything, I've always heard him referred
Iceman. Right. As a matter of fact, when his name was on the ballot, you saw that, too.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. It was like in parentheses, right? Mm-hmm.
In quotation marks like parentheses.
Like a nickname. It said
right.
Iceman. Yeah, but I guess I don't remember when he was in the Impressions or
right.
even in his solo career. People always just said Jerry Butler.
Yeah.
But he was the Iceman. I need a cool DJ name like that. What would be a cool DJ name?
Dino Daddio.
Dino Daddio?
Dino Daddio.
Well, there was a Daddio Daily.
Daddio Daily,
back
yeah.
in the day.
Yep.
Daddio Dino. How about Daddio?
There you go. There you go.
But I want something cool.
Like well, you had a rapper name, too.
Baldy Dean.
Baldy Dean, yeah.
Baldy. Not Balding Dean.
I said Baldy, yes.
Baldy.
Right.
Yeah, it's too late for me to be balding. That was like 20 years ago. Yeah, Baldy D. What would be a good nickname for Schwanny?
Schwanny doesn't work for you?
Oh, I guess that
Which
is.
I've had since like fifth grade.
I guess that's a nickname. I want you to have like a cool DJ name, though.
Oh.
Even though you're not really a DJ.
No, not anymore.
Mr. Smooth.
Mr. Smooth.
Smooth Daddy.
Anything I can think of would be too insulting.
And not appropriate.
I'm not
for
surprised by that.
How about Andy needs a good sports guy's name? Yeah. Do the sports guys, you know, everybody has like a nickname for everybody else.
Yeah, but it's always like a some kind of a combination of their last name or their first name. I've as long as I've been around, I'm the second generation A-Maze.
A-Maze.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Yeah.
Do people call you by initials? I notice sports people, you know, just they don't have time to say somebody's whole first name, so they just go, hey, A-M.
Yeah, I've had that happen. There's more, I think there's a better initials that they sound a little better than A-M. My middle initial is J, so I've been called AJ every once in a while.
I like AJ.
Yeah, but there's only a few people in my life that actually call me that.
Isn't your middle initial Paul?
Yeah.
Your
it's P, right. David Paul, yeah.
So I could call you DP?
Yeah.
Hey, DP.
Make sure it's DP. Emphasis on D.
Yeah.
D.
Yeah, DP's got the hits for you. Coming right up after the Baldy D show.
You may remember back. You may remember back in the WFYR era.
Fire radio.
When we were there. Our music director, a gentleman, John Weatherby, would call me the Schwann Man.
The Schwann?
Schwann Man.
The Schwann Man.
Schwann Man.
It's the Schwann Man.
I wasn't quite sure. I wasn't quite sure how that, you know, came about. But, you know, everybody else's, it was Schwanny, but he said Schwann Man. And it was because when he was growing up.
Yes.
Did
he know a Schwann woman?
They had, no, they had, they would have Schwann's ice cream delivered to their home. And it would be, you know, the milkman, the mailman, here's the Schwann Man.
Okay.
So,
all right.
You that's how that got to go.
No relation, by the way. So.
Schwann
Man.
Yeah.
Kind of like that.
Hey, Schwann Man. Lay out some wax for me.
Some stacks of wax.
Yeah. John Weatherby, my old buddy.
Great, great guy to work with.
Passed away last year.
That's what you said. Yes. I'm very sorry to hear that.
Yeah. Good guy. Cancer. he was a good guy. Good guy. Anywho, okay, well, thanks for bringing me down. I'm kidding. I'm just joking, Schwann Man.
Schwann Man.
Yeah, don't let the lid come off the pot. Take it easy, man.
The Schwann Man with you on a Sunday.
Hey, remember when they used to have that event called Hustle Up the Hancock?
Yes.
Where they, you know, people for no reason would just run up to the top.
As a matter of fact,
nobody was chasing them, but they were still running up to the top of the John Hancock. It's not even called the Hancock Building anymore.
No. It's the former handgun, but they had a stair climb there this morning.
Yeah, it's going on this morning.
The annual Hustle Chicago stair climb.
And we are going to talk to one of the people behind that when we come right back. 1021. This is when a song was a song, I'll tell you what. Doing the hustle. Doing the hustle over at 875 North Michigan Avenue, formerly the John Hancock Building. It's always the site of a great fundraiser for respiratory health. Rob Anderson is the CEO of the Respiratory Health Association, sponsoring the 1,632-step journey atop 875 North Michigan Avenue. Rob, welcome to WGN. Nice to have you on with us again.
Well, good morning, and honored to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you very much. So explain what has been taking place there this morning.
Sure. We're quite a few hours into it. We're here, actually, I'm talking to you from the 360 observation deck at the very top of 875 North Michigan, where I'm watching people cross the finish line, both a mix of excited and they've climbed the 94 stories to get to the top. They decided to skip the elevator and thought it was a really good idea to wake up this morning and take the stairs.
And for what purpose is all of this taking place?
Sure. The event is sponsored by Respiratory Health Association, and we're a Chicago nonprofit over 118 years, and the mission is to just make Chicago here, fighting for cancer research and support those with asthma and COPD and just cleaner air for everybody.
Yeah, we were talking about that earlier, you know, lung problems, et cetera, with regard to the health condition of the Pope. And, you know, this really all kind of ties in with people who live with asthma, people who live with COPD, with respiratory issues, even lung cancer, et cetera. That's kind of all involved in this. Where are we with this, and what exactly does the Respiratory Health Association do to promote clean air?
Sure. Well, on the clean air side, that's something that we think is going to become even more important in the coming years. You know, RHA has done a lot of work in the past, but as we look ahead, we do see some challenges out there that we want to be on the right side of. Chicago is a phenomenal city. It's an amazing place. I'm excited that my family and I decided to move here and make this our home. There's a lot of pride, but, you know, Chicago's always had challenges with air quality as being the transit hub that it is. All the factories and all the diesel coming in means that Chicago's air quality has traditionally been about 20% worse than the rest of the U.S. And that's the kind of thing that impacts everybody. It causes higher rates of asthma. It causes higher rates of COPD. And, you know, nobody likes pollution. I think we can all be unified. It doesn't matter if you're a Cubs fan or a White Sox fan, if you call it the Hancock Center still or not, or 875 North Michigan. We all want clean air, and nobody wants to breathe pollution. So we're involved in a lot of administrative policy, legislation, trying to get change for standards to make this a healthier place for everybody.
Yeah, are things changing for the good? I mean, for a while, there were regulations regarding how much you could dump into water, you know, into the lake and into rivers, how much you could burn and put into the air. Has that changed? Because, I mean, lots of things have become deregulated.
Sure. You know, it's always progress. And the rules definitely are different than they were 100 years ago. But we want to keep progressing in the right direction. And we do see some challenges that years ahead. Some of the recent federal actions, we believe, are misguided in protecting the movement towards clean energy and clean air. And so we want to fight to have Illinois and Chicago kind of be a leader in that way. And it does make a difference. This is a matter of, that's why we always say an event like this helps raise awareness. Well, what does that really do? It makes people know that their voice can make a difference. When you reach out to your representatives, when you come to our events, it shows that you care about this and people listen. And so if we believe in this, we can really make Chicago an example of how it can be done right for the U.S.?
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised to learn that Chicago was as high on the air pollution list as you described a moment ago. We think of heavy industrialized areas as being that way. I mean, back in the day when I was a kid, I grew up on the south side near the steel mill. And, you know, you just didn't even notice anymore how dirty the air was. But it seems like we had gotten away from that a little bit. Apparently not so much.
Well, you know, it's all progress. And you're right, we've made a lot of progress. In fact, Respiratory Health Association was very involved in the last 20 years with the smoking cessation efforts, banning smoking indoors, with shutting down some of the, you know, coal-fired pollution plants. But there's more progress to be made. We're involved in some activities to try and get to emissions for diesel by 2035 and shifting even more to clean energy for our cars, because, you know, that is the biggest pollutant, is all of the transportation that's coming in out of the city. It's a great thing. It's a base of our industry, but it does bring a lot of pollution. And what you see is rates of asthma and breathing issues that are five times greater when you're living along those high transit lines. And that's not fair to the people that live there. You know, they don't know it. That's just, like you said, that's their way of life. And we want to make this a difference.
Yeah. So about how many participants did you have there at 875 North Michigan this morning?
Well, we're still going. We started at 6:50 this morning. We're going to go. I'm the last climber. So sometime after 3 p.m., after everybody's done, I'm going to be the caboose at the end of the train to go up the stairs. And we're going to have over 2,100 people today. It's more than a sellout. We're supposed to sell out of 2,000 people, and we got permission to go a little above it. And it's a fun group. Anybody that thinks it's going to be fun to climb up and those 1,632 stairs must be crazy enough to have a good party at the top.
And what is that, 94 stories? Is that right?
94 floors to the top. That's right.
Wow, that's amazing. And then I would imagine you've got some kind of party, celebration, something going up on top for the people who complete the journey.
Absolutely. If you make it up here, you deserve it. And, you know, we're thankful for our host at the 360 Observation Deck. It's a beautiful day out there, views all around, so you get to hang out up here, enjoy your finisher's medal and some snacks. Before you go to the after party, we've got, you know, pizza, beer, and massages, and just a great time. So we want to make it fun. It's meant to be a fun event. We want to have that combo. We want to have a great time, and we want to help raise money to make a difference that's going to help everybody's lives, because whoever you are, if you breathe, clean air matters to you. So everybody out there listening today, what we're doing today is helping you and your life and your family.
Yeah, how do you prepare for something like this, Rob, to get ready and to train for it? You must do a little bit of pre-work, right?
You know, you can. We brought in this year the U.S. Tower Running Championships. So the Hustle is actually the host of the championships for all the United States, which means a number of the world-class elite climbers are here with us today. And they told us a bit about their training methods. But some ways, there's no other way to train than just to do it, to get out there and practice taking the stairs. It certainly tells you how important lung strength is when you start get about 30 floors up and start breathing kind of heavy. But we're honored to be their host. In fact, the world-ranked top climber today finished in 9 minutes and 55 seconds.
Wow.
For under 10 minutes for all 94 floors.
That's impressive. So we're going to look to you to go like 8 minutes when you do yours at the end of the day today.
That's right. We're not calling them the winner yet. You know, there's still more people to go. Maybe I can beat them. Okay. I don't think so, though.
All right. Winner so far. We'll see what happens later on. People want to get more information on all of this. Rob, what's the best way to do it?
Sure. There's a number of ways to be involved, and it's all available on our website at resphealth, that's resphealth.org. Whatever you do makes a difference. You can sign up to help be one of our advocacy partners to help. We'll help you reach out to your representatives to tell them that you care about clean air. Of course, you can always give. Everything makes a difference. $5 is more than nothing, and it all adds up. So far this morning, our goal for this year's Hustle is $800,000. We passed the $700,000 mark at about 9 p.m. last night. We're about to 704, and we truly appreciate. We are grateful for the support, and we want to make a difference for everybody's lives.
Good deal. ResphealthHealth.org. Rob Anderson's CEO of the Respiratory Health Association. Good luck with that run today, my friend, that climb. Have a great time.
I'm excited. We've got a great group. Thank you for having us, and thank you, everybody, for being a part of a fun event today.
And now, it is 10:36. Time for the Week in Theater. What is going on stage in Chicago? Let's start off with the newest production that just opened this past Monday at the Goodman Theater, called Betrayal. It stars Academy Award winner Helen Hunt. Academy Award winner, Golden Globe winner Helen Hunt in a three-person production of a story of betrayal. It's a story of a love triangle, which I got to say I was really disappointed in. And I haven't read one good review from anybody about this, so I know it's not just me on this. I found the whole thing kind of flat. I found the performances, sadly, especially Helen Hunt's performance, a little on the flat side. It didn't really bring anything new to the discussion. There have been, you know, lots of stories, lots of plays, lots of movies about love triangles. There's really nothing unusual about this one. It just really was not that engaging. This particular production is told backwards. It starts at the end and works its way back to the beginning. So in that sense, it's something unique. Although, you know, this sort of Benjamin Button storytelling of, you know, a reverse timeline also is really not that unusual. So the production is going to be here through March. I'm not recommending it. A lot of people are going to check it out, and they're going to make up their own minds. And, you know, that's always a good idea. My opinion is just one person's opinion. Although, as I say, I've not talked to anybody who left the theater and said, wow, that was great. So, you know, take that into account before you go to see that. A couple of other productions that are going on right now. One is a stage version of the very popular board game and cult status movie Clue. Did you play Clue when you were a kid, the board game? They've taken that whole concept and turned it into a live stage show. And that's going to be at the CIBC Theater until March the 2nd. Also, they've just thrown on a one-week extension to the Shattered Globe Theater production of their story, Lobby Hero. It's a story that asks the question whether doing the wrong thing for the right reason can ever be justified. Also on stage today, as a matter of fact, at the Chicago Theater, the gang from the TV show Queer Eye is doing a live stage production, so that may be something that you are interested in. I had mentioned earlier that it is the anniversary of the production of Mel Brooks's Producers that went on to win a record number of Tony Awards when it went to Broadway, but it was February 2001. When they did their pre-Broadway tryout here in Chicago. And before the show even opened, I sat down with all the cast members. And most importantly, I sat down with the writer of the whole concept of the Producers, both the stage version and the original movie version, the great Mel Brooks. And we're going to go back into the vault and share that conversation with you when we come back. Amazing. 10:44, Dean Richards, Sunday morning. And our Week in Theater segment this week brought to us by the Lyric Opera of Chicago. When the original motion picture, the 1967 version of The Producers came out, it just had, you know, people's jaws dropping to the floor. A musical about Hitler? How could there be such a thing? But then when people actually saw the movie and saw what a satire it was, It was the story of a couple of producers, a couple of Broadway producers who intentionally wanted to produce the worst musical possible. They'd worked out a scheme where they would make, you know, twice as much money by producing a flop than they would by producing a hit. And, you know, they went through all the motions to try to find what would be the worst play possible and came up with a musical that had been written by somebody that extolled the virtues of Adolf Hitler. It was quite a controversial undertaking by Mel Brooks, who brought in to be his stars the great Zero Mostel and Gene Wilder, a mild-mannered accountant and a con artist theater producer who, you know, tried to get rich by fraudulently overselling interests in the musical. So all the years went by from 1967 to about the year 2000 when they began working on a stage version of The Producers. I didn't think there could be anything funnier than this movie or more satirical than this movie. But Mel Brooks did it again. I mean, he was the genius mastermind behind all of this. He brought in the renowned director, Susan Stroman. He brought in Nathan Lane to take over the Zero Mostel role and Matthew Broderick to take over the Gene Wilder role. The show went on to make Broadway history. It won, I think it was 12 Tony Awards, a record number of Tony Awards, more Tony Awards than any other production ever. And the whole thing started right here in Chicago 24 years ago this month. It was February of 2001 when they brought this whole production to Chicago. And really, they were creating it on stage for the very first time. Nobody had seen it yet. And when it opened, jaws dropped to the floor again because of its controversial content. But mostly, hilarity ensued. I don't know how many times I saw this production, 4 or 5 times, maybe between the pre-Broadway run and actually seeing it on Broadway, seeing other productions that have come through the years. It's hilarious. It's just absolutely hilarious. And that is thanks to the genius of the great Mel Brooks. 98 years old Mel Brooks right now. So, you know, what was he, 78? Something in the 70s back then when he conceived all of this. And when we sat down in the theater and spoke one-on-one on the making of this production, taking a classic motion picture, as I called it, you know, messing with the Mona Lisa, as I call it. You're taking something which is classic and messing with it by putting it on stage. And here's how he reacted.
Messing with the Mona Lisa. You know, I'm writing lyrics now, so that's a wonderful little little burst of alliteration. Messing with the Mona Lisa, yes, I like it.
You've got a masterpiece. You've got
a masterpiece, film, another M.
Messing with the masterpiece Mona Lisa for the rap version of yourself.
Oh, you know, this is a love letter. The Producers is a love letter to Broadway. So we're not going out of line. We're just expanding it. You know, it was meant to go to heaven, and we've taken it to heaven, you know.
Are you concerned that because there are such aficionados of this film, they know every line, they can recite it, that they're going to feel like you've changed the...
Yeah, I know. It's a problem, but, you know, I mean, but I hope they'll understand and buy they'll get sucked in by all the great new stuff, and they'll forgive us for messing with some of the old stuff, you know, because a musical must make that metamorphosis between film and stage, you know, it has to happen.
You were talking about how David Geffen kind of got the ball rolling with this, although other people had approached you about doing it. What was the creative process like for you? You wrote 14, 15 new songs for this whole thing. When did that explosion of creativity for this whole thing get
going? You know, it's been a long time since I left business, you know. My first movie was The Producers. There was no business attached to it. Pure art, pure joy. I didn't care if they paid me. I just wanted them to do it. My next movie was very much the same. It was a little movie called The 12 Chairs. I did it in Yugoslavia. A novel by Ilfan Petrov that I adapted. And then, for a while, for about 5 years, I loved making movies. It was my muse. It was my art. And then after a while, I was in business. Watch the next one, Mr. Brooks. And they all stunk until I got to History of the World and I got creative again. You know, it's good to be the king. And then I cooled it for a while because nothing spoke to me. Nothing said to me, you got to do this. This is great. And then the idea of doing The Producers and writing 15 new songs, new melodies, new lyrics. And I was in heaven again. It was like I was born, you know, the muse was alive in me again, you know. So some of the songs are good. Yeah.
So you wanted to feed your own creative soul.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, your own hunger.
You know, we get into this business because we're artists and it's a great joy. And then the minute we're in it, you know, somebody manages us and we get an agent and then we're booked and suddenly we're a commodity and we're no longer an artist, you know. So it's been a long time and boy am I happy to be doing what I'm doing again.
To have a project like this with the stars, and I mean this is
to have
full guns.
To have Nathan Lane as Max Bialystock and Matthew Broderick as Leo Bloom and Susan Stroman with her magic wand. Stroman is the girl. She's the girl. She puts the show, into show business. She gives you all your dreams of glory are right on the stage. She knows that's her job and she does it. Now, this has been a honeymoon right from the beginning.
Why did you decide to bring it here first?
To Chicago?
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's a good question. There's a lot of sophisticated people. When I first did my first movie, The Producers, the original one, it ran for a year in only 3 places in America and nowhere else. Didn't run anywhere else. It played in New York, in L.A., and Chicago. And it was discovered by the late, great Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert. They were in opposite camps then, the Trib and the Sun-Times. They got together, they took me out to dinner, and they raved about the genius of this movie. And it played here close to a year. So Chicago is producer's town, you know. There are enough sophisticates here, and now there are enough people who can travel from Indiana, etc., who are not so sophisticated, who will love it as a musical and not be so strict about why did you change this to that, you know. I mean, it's a wonderful melting pot.
There must have been a lot of, when the movie first came out, it's too Jewish, it's too controversial.
Oh, please.
It's too outrageous. A musical number about Hitler, unbelievable.
Oh, please.
Do you think the climate has changed a lot?
Well, I do. I think bad taste is in good taste now. It's taken a long time, but, you know, they finally
caught up.
Right,
with you,
right.
We had this.
A little piece of The Producers, the Broadway musical. With Mel Brooks, 24 years ago this month, that it played here in Chicago before going on to Broadway to a tremendous amount of success. A little trip back to the old theater vault here this morning for that. It's 10:56, and this is Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN. Coming up, we are going to talk with Daisy Ridley, who you may know best as Rey from 3 of the Star Wars movies. She's got a brand new action thriller that's out that opened this week in theaters called The Thriller. So we've got a bona fide A-lister joining us on the show today. Also, I wanted to remind you that while we're talking about theater, we're going to be out at the Paramount Theater in Aurora tonight. We're doing one of our Dean's Night Out, And 10 of you have won a pair of tickets to join me at the show tonight. We'll have a little pre-show reception. We always have a nice time, a nice little chat, a couple of cocktails before the show. And then we'll enjoy watching Waitress, the Tony Award-winning musical. It's making its Chicago area debut out at the Paramount in Aurora with music from the great Sarah Bareilles. So that'll be in town, so I'll be reviewing that. Probably not tomorrow, but more likely on Tuesday. I'll give you my review on that show. So we've got lots of good things coming up on the theater segment still to come for the day. Also, I wanted to get into some of the awards that have been given out. We're in awards season right now. Do you know 1 week from today is the Oscars? March the 2nd, the Academy Awards. And, you know, so we'll preview that a little bit today, but also go over the awards that were given out last night, of which there were many. The Independent Spirit Awards were given out last night, as were the NAACP Image Awards. We'll go over the highlights of that coming up in a little while, and then also tonight are the Screen Actors Guild Awards, the SAG Awards. I'll tell you who the nominees are for that and who I think might win. And we'll you know, give you a little award show preview and get you ready for the Oscars for next week. So we've got a lot still going on here today. A short show today. We're only on until 12:15 today. And, Andy, what do we have coming up? We've got, is it basketball?
Yeah, some Big Ten basketball. Indiana taking on Purdue.
Okay, so we'll look forward to that coming up at 12:15 today. Schwani's got an update on all the latest news coming up in a little while. An update on the Pope's condition, I would imagine, right?
Yes, things remaining stable here, still in critical condition, but they're he is stable and had a restful night, as they said, and expected to be in the hospital for another full week or so.
Yeah, I don't know if you heard, because I know you're very busy running your newsroom.
Yes.
But when we had Dr. Jeremy Silver on our weekend health segment that we always do at 9:30, he didn't talk specifically about the Pope's condition, because you can't really do that without, you know, seeing his charts and, you know, all like that. But he talked in general about the kind of conditions with which the Pope is dealing right now. And it was very, very interesting to hear what it is that's, you know, that patients like the Pope who have those similar kind of conditions are going through.
In addition to the fact that he has a partial lung removed, part of a lung that had been removed many years ago.
Because of something similar.
Yes. Chronic thing that he has dealt with, right?
Yeah. So, we'll post that interview later on with Dr. Silver so you can listen to it. I thought it was very interesting. As for now, let's move on and get the very late. Am I the only one that get goosebumps when I hear that national anthem on the organ?
No, I was getting them too.
And then Cornelissen starts singing, and like, oh my gosh!
Yeah, you know, I was searching for some good audio of the '91 NHL All-Star Game, and the crowd is so loud.
Yeah,
you can't hear the notes.
You can't hear the organ, but it's what an accomplishment to be behind the keyboards for that long.
Yep. 1990s when he first started full-time with the Blackhawks.
Yeah, that's a long time.
But then well before the 70s, Wrigley, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was that before Gary Pressey there?
Yes. Yes.
Who's listening? He listens every Sunday.
Yeah, Gary knows all the details, I'm sure.
Gary, yeah. I'm sure he'll send me a text any minute on that. But, Nancy Faust over at White Sox Park.
Right. She was at the United Center for a little while, too. I didn't realize that. I was looking up info on Frank, and she was at the Chicago Stadium from 1985 to 1989.
Wow.
And then Frank replaced her, Nancy Faust, at the stadium.
Didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't realize that either.
It's a majestic feeling. I mean, I know they have all kinds of technology now. They can play any video, any recording, anything. But you hear a person behind a keyboard at a sporting event, national anthem or otherwise, even if it's ba da 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 da.
Yeah.
It's magic.
Well, you know, the thing that Gary was always great at, and of course I was around him more than anybody with our time with the Cubs, but there were the little subtle things. You know, there's a thing in baseball with a full count, 3-2, and the bases are loaded, everybody runs on the pitch because something is going to happen. Either it's going to be a ball or there's going to be an out, but everybody starts to run. And he plays the like everybody's at the starting gate ready to go.
Right.
And it's just so subtle. But if you're at the game and you're watching it and you know baseball, you're like, oh, my God, he gets it.
It's like the soundtrack of a movie.
Yeah.
It's the soundtrack that enhances the action that you're watching.
Yeah.
Bum, 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 stuff like that.
That's great. Yeah, there's still a few stadiums that feature the organ more than the loud type of music. I mean, Dodger Stadium does. They have an organist there that is featured a lot. I know the Cubs have a couple of different guys doing it now, and it's more of the recorded music than it is the organ. But they do have some time that they play.
Gary Prissy was the best.
He was awesome.
You know, when I was a kid, I took organ lessons.
Really?
So why didn't you pursue this?
I should have. I played a mean clarinet polka.
I'll bet you did. That'd be the only thing you'd play. Pausing the innings. That's the only thing you'd hear.
Why does he play the same song over and over?
The only one he knows.
I played a mean Spanish Eyes.
Spanish Eyes. I was going to say Lady of Spain, but Spanish Eyes.
Spanish Eyes because the organ had that...
Yeah.
So I would put that on there and I would be like da 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 da.
I knew how to play the Star Spangled Banner with one finger.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
My grandma taught me that. She played the piano very well. And of course Peter Pumpkin Eater on the black keys on the I know how to do that.
Right.
And you know, the best one to do is chopsticks.
Chopsticks.
Chopsticks is good.
Never fails. You could do that too, Dean, during the pitching changes and the.
I knew Heart and Soul.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah, I knew Heart and Soul. I knew that one. Boy, I was a hit. Well, like all my friends
all came over. To, yeah,
all my friends were rocking out to the Rolling Stones and Anna Gatta DeVita, and I'm sitting there.
Did you do a live concert on your radio station?
That
would have been neat.
I never did on my radio station, but my mother would have all of her girlfriends over.
Yeah.
And Dean, come and play the organ.
That's right.
It's like, somebody chop my fingers off right now, please, please, please. How about that?
Nice.
How about that?
That's, my goodness.
Right? I have goosebumps right
now. What organ and where was that done?
Let me see here.
The Notre Dame organ for the rededication of the cathedral.
It was a cathedral setting. Let me see here. Wilton, Connecticut, 1966. Yeah, that's all I got on this. But that was pretty cool.
That was great.
I'm still searching for an audible anthem from 1991.
One that you can actually hear without the crowd cheering.
Okay. The crowd was so loud you couldn't hear the music.
That was incredible.
I was going to say, it's funny to hear the national anthem, the last part, da 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 da, without hearing people screaming and going crazy like they always do at a ball game. This week was a particular anniversary very near and dear to me. It was February of 1910 that the Boy Scouts of America were founded.
Hmm.
And I was big into Boy Scouts when I was a kid. Were you guys?
I was a Cub Scout.
I was a Cub Scout. Yeah,
that was as far as I went.
Yeah.
Couldn't make it as much as us tough guys.
I was a Cub Scout.
Do you remember anything? Do you remember the Cub Scout oath?
I don't.
What was it? On my honor, I will do my duty. Do my best to do my duty to God and country, and then I don't remember the rest of it.
And to obey the Scout
law.
To keep myself physically fit, morally straight, and something else.
You know what a very vivid memory is for my Cub Scout years?
Mm.
my first baseball game. They put us on a bus.
Yes, indeed.
And we went to old Comiskey Park to see the White Sox. And it was the, they played the Angels.
Were you in uniform?
No. Yes, we were in uniform.
Yeah.
And it had to be a kind of a scout day where, you know, Comiskey offered a deal to scouting troops. There were Cub Scouts, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, all in the same section.
Wow.
We were in the upper deck along the third baseline. It was great.
That was one of two things I joined to get to Cubs games. The Cub Scouts, because I knew they were going to go. And I became a crossing guard.
Ah, yeah.
Because the crossing guards had a trip
by
to ballpark.
Grade school.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, so you had an ulterior motive.
Darn right I did. Yeah.
Crossing guard was fun.
I was a crossing guard also.
You still have your patrol belt?
I actually do.
I lost mine. I had to keep borrowing it from friends.
Was yours orange or white?
It was orange.
Mine was orange, yeah.
Yeah, mine was orange. But they were just transitioning from those old white ones.
The white ones, yeah.
They would look so ratty, and then they got us like these bright orange ones that, you know, reflected car lights and everything.
Right. Yeah.
I ran a tough corner, too.
Took no guff from anybody, huh?
No, you got to stand behind the line, stand in twos.
You know,
I had a little stockade on my corner. If you didn't follow the rules,
you aren't going to school.
Don't mess with me.
You know, I think Barney and Andy Griffith was at the school crossing too. Of course, it was the school crossing, right?
Here it is. On my honor, I will do my best to do my duty to God, my country, and to obey the scout law. This isn't it. Wait a second. I can remember all but the last line. And I remember the 12 points. I think it was the scout law. A scout is trustworthy, loyal, helpful, friendly, courteous, kind, obedient, trustworthy, loyal, helpful, friendly, courteous, kind, obedient, cheerful, thrifty, brave, clean, and reverent.
Was that 12?
And most of those things I am.
If you say so.
Where's my scout oath? Boy Scout oath. Here. On my honor, I will do my best to do my duty to God and to my country, to obey the scout law, to help other people at all times. That's got me written all over it. To keep myself physically strong, mentally awake, and morally straight. Thank you for not laughing.
Yeah. No comment.
Gosh, I was so into Boy Scouts. That's a major part
of it. Yeah, you really were serious about it.
I was.
Were you trying to go for being an Eagle Scout?
I was. And I'll tell you why I didn't make it. Before I was in Scouts, we were swimming once.
Oh, yes. You told this story.
And I had a near-drowning experience. Terrifying. The lifeguard had to jump in and save my life and blah, blah, blah. But it left me terrified of going in the water.
Well, that would do it, sure.
And
so you couldn't swim then.
So two of the things that you have to accomplish in the Scouts in order to become an Eagle Scout, swimming merit badge and life-saving merit badge. And I was not qualified to do either one of those.
Right.
Now, I've since taken, as an adult, I took swimming classes so I could overcome my fear of it. And it was terrifying. Yeah. As an adult, it was terrifying. But I overcame it. And now I'm a pretty good swimmer now. And I did check to see if I could go back to finish my Eagle Scout-ness. And they pretty much laughed me off. So you're a 50-year-old man, and you want to do what? We had a little celebration of scouting on the TV morning news on Friday, Thursday or Friday. And I brought my old uniform in.
Oh, cool.
I still have my uniform and my badges and all my stuff. I kept it. It's the kind of hoarder that I am. and I showed it, and yeah, it was pretty cool.
When did you end your scouting career? High school age?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. But you talked about, you know, going out to the Indiana Dunes to go camping and hiking out there.
All the time.
Michigan, I think you went up to Michigan once.
We went to Michigan. We, you know where we would go? Awasapie Scout Camp in Whitehall, Michigan.
Yeah. That was the nice area.
That was the highlight of our summer, to go up to Awasapie, because you go up there for a couple of weeks. And, you know, it's canoeing, which I wasn't allowed to do because I couldn't swim. But most kids had a great time. No, we did, you know, we just did like all kinds of outdoorsy stuff. And you're hanging around with your pals and, you know, telling ghost stories. You sit around the campfire at night and tell ghost stories and sing songs. You guys missed out.
We did.
Oh, the Scout Company is the best company that ever came out of the land of the free.
Wasn't there a cartoon show called The Funny Company that was on
yes.
Garfield Goose?
Yes. Funny.
Just company. Trying to make conversation there.
I didn't know what you're, I didn't know where you were going with that.
Well, the song was similar to it. They had a theme song that went, oh, the funny company, da 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 da.
Oh,
da,
the funny, the funny company. I forget how that goes, though.
I just remember.
Yeah, it's similar. It's similar.
It is similar.
I just remember the Electric Company.
Right.
Oh, Electric Company. Yeah, that was your era.
My era.
847 area code says, I remember my brothers competing with those wooden cars. What were they called? It was the Pine Box Derby.
Pine Box Derby.
No, Pinewood Derby.
Pinewood Derby.
I actually won my one of my heats at the old Oak Mill Mall over there at Milwaukee and Oakton. And I got onto the second round, I think, and I think I was eliminated at that point. But I remember my dad and I making that car in our basement.
Yeah, we did the same thing.
We painted that thing. It was bright red with white racing stripes on it.
Yep.
Wow.
And, you know, you have to melt the lead or the metal to put in the front of the car to weight it down.
Right.
And they weighed the car before we put it on the little track.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it was fun. I mean, that was a lot of good times.
That was a big deal, those races.
I taped some quarters on the front of mine.
Ah, okay, that works.
Yeah. And it didn't work. The quarters fell off. The wheels fell off. Everything fell apart. As I am now, not very mechanically inclined.
Yeah. That was so much fun
back then. But we did that on the morning TV show the other day. Mm. So we had some kids in from a Cub Scout troop in Park Ridge, and we had a Pine Box Derby competition. They brought in their cars, and we set up an incline. And it was really fun. These kids are hilarious, by the way. These little Cub Scouts are just nothing but balls of energy. And they were completely hilarious. It was a great time. Let me see here. Oh, Dean, Awasapie is the oldest scout camp in America.
Hmm.
I didn't know that. That was the greatest time, going to Awasapie and spending a couple of weeks up there. As we got a little older, toward maybe the last year, we discovered that there was another campground right next door to Awasapie where they had a pool table.
Oh.
And we would sneak over there and play pool. My friend Charlie and I, we would go over there and play pool while we were supposed to be building a raft. It was good stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess we did miss out on all that.
You did.
Didn't get that far.
Yeah. Could have watched me drown.
No, I wouldn't want to do that. I had a friend, though, that made Eagle Scout. It was my age. He was in my class, and he made Eagle Scout.
Maybe we should create Senior Scout.
I like that.
You know, we can all just kind of do all those fun things, but, you know, scale it back just a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, we could do all those things, plus create some new ones, like sit down on a chair without going, ugh.
Exactly. See, this is the kind of competitions I can win.
Some older skills, like walking from here to there.
Yeah.
Fun.
You have to be able to walk from here to there and not go, oh. when you get up out of the chair.
Not or, grab your knee, not grab your hamstring. Yeah.
Oh, boy, here's a memory. 217 area code. I remember going to Ahwatukee as a scout, 2 weeks of bathing in the lake, food dropped off at your campground, and cooking your food over a campfire, swimming with the buddy system. And if you didn't get your to your buddy in time, you were swatted with a canoe paddle.
Oh, man.
Wow.
Oh,
wow. Actually, all true. All those points, 100% true. Except the 2 weeks of bathing in a lake. We didn't even bother with the bathing back then.
Oh, after 2 weeks? Hello.
No, we had showers. We had showers.
Oh, okay.
I don't know why they were swimming in the lake, but we had showers. But yeah, they would drop off food. They would drop off the food, and then you had to build a campfire and cook your own food on the campfire. Really fun. I think that's where I began my cooking career.
It could be. Could be. Did you make Hiro's nachos?
Yes. I was making fancy.
Hiro's.
Making fancy
I said
stuff
it
for
right.
the kids.
I just said it right. I did not say gyros.
Yeah, well, you also didn't say it right.
Oh, come on.
You were closer at this time.
Okay, thank you.
You're getting better. Hoppa!
I see 1137.
Dean Richards, Sunday morning, WGN. Time for our Dean's List A-List interview for this week. A major star in a brand new movie that we'll share in just a minute or two. Looks like the number one movie at this weekend's box office, again, will be Captain America Brave New World, although the box office numbers are down by about 68% from its opening weekend. Not a big surprise. All the Marvel fans went when the movie first opened, and now it's dwindling off. And honestly, Captain America Brave New World is not getting fantastic reviews. I think people are just tired of the superhero movies. I don't know. I know that I very definitely am. They need to come up with something new to revitalize that whole thing, because the regular formula is just not working anymore. The movies that people are going to see, apparently, are some of the Oscar movies. People are going to see Anora, which was a winner at the Independent Spirit Awards that took place last night. These are the awards for, independent movies. Hang on, let me reach back here and get my list of all the big winners. At the Spirit Awards, Anora was the big winner. It took home Best Feature. It took home Best Lead Performance. It took home Best Director. Let me see here. Yeah, so that one, it's an incredible movie. I will say that much. Sean Baker is the director of that movie, and he was the winner for that. Very likely could win at the Academy Awards, which is next Sunday, by the way. There is this movie, Emilia Perez, which honestly I think is just a so-so movie, even before all the controversy with its lead performer in it, making some unfortunate statements. I thought it was just an okay movie, a good movie. I didn't think it was a bad movie, but I don't think that it's one of the best movies of the year, as a lot of people were saying. That said, I believe that Zoe Saldana, who has a supporting role in the film, may win Best Supporting Actress at the Academy Awards next week on that, possibly may win tonight with the Screen Actors Guild Awards. You know what? Right now, I'm kind of high on, and it's ironic because of the news story following the Pope's declining health, is this movie that's out called Conclave, starring Ralph Fiennes, and it is the story of a pope who passes away, and the process of the conclave, which is, you know, the secretive conclave in which the process takes place of electing a new pope. The movie is just dramatically spellbounding. That's one that I would recommend. I'm going to say, I mean, outside of Wicked, which I don't think has a chance of winning any of the major awards. It should, because it's movie making at its best, but this seems to be a really serious year for Academy Award pictures. And all the other award ceremonies leading up to this, it's been Anora, it's been Conclave, it's been The Brutalist, it's been Emilia Perez, although Emilia Perez seems to have lost quite a bit of steam since this controversy took place. But I think Conclave, of my favorites, I'm not sure, I don't think it's going to win Best Picture. I don't think it's everybody's cup of tea, but it is an amazing movie. Story, the performances, the relevance. Now with, you know, considering the real Pope's health situation, I would highly recommend you see Conclave. It's a really great movie. One that opened this week, it's not eligible for awards qualification this year, and really probably isn't an awards movie, I would call it more of a popcorn movie, is one that is called Cleaner. It is the story of a former U.S. Army weapons expert who becomes a window washer and just happens to be at her job washing windows in a high-rise building when a terrorist attack takes place. In this building, on the top floor, it's an energy company that's holding their big gala, you know, event. And terrorists break in, take over top floor of a high rise, threatening to kill people, threatening, you know, people who have no escape because it's at the top floor of a high rise building. Not the most original of concepts, but I got to say, it's pretty engaging. You know, there are moments of some pretty high tension in this movie. Daisy Ridley stars in the movie. She's the former Army weapons specialist who, you know, works to try to save these people who are being held hostage in the building. Daisy Ridley is the actress you may know best from three Star Wars movies. She played Rey in three of the Star Wars movies alongside Adam Driver in this franchise, and she's pretty good in this. I got to give it to her. Usually, these are roles that are reserved for male actors. You don't see women actors, going for these super physical roles. But she is more than up for it, She, it kind of emulates, this whole movie sort of emulates Die Hard. I mean, it's, tragedy in a high rise. One person is coming to the rescue. You know, it's very, very Die Hard in that way. A little bit Towering Inferno, at the same time. Disaster at the top of a building. How are they going to be rescued? Kind of thing. So for originality, the movie, is not the most original, but just for pure fun, it's a well-done movie. They do a nice job putting it all together, keeping you on the edge of your seat, giving you a few little jump scares along the way. I gave it a Dean's List B-. It's harmless fun. And was lucky enough to be able to sit down and talk with Daisy Ridley about the movie and about now being an action star.
Let's start off just in talking about action movies. You know, it's a genre that has been done and done and done and done. I wonder what it is that you look for or hope for when you approach something like this to make it special, to make it something fresh and new.
Well, it's interesting because I love action movies, but one always remembers the emotional drive. So I love John Wick. And then you think, oh, it's the dog. It's the small catalyst. Well, it's not a small catalyst, but it's that catalyst that leads us into John Wick. And Die Hard, I watched over Christmas. And it's just a man who loves his wife so much and has made some mistakes in trying to figure it out. So my favorite action movies are, of course, Bang Bang, Hit Hit, love watching fight scenes, love watching driving scenes, actually, but with that real emotional core. So doing this, I was very excited for the action and then really looking forward to creating the relationship with Matt, who plays my brother in the film, because that for me is really the heart of the movie. And that is Joey's driving force. And really, when everything goes absolutely pear-shaped, her ultimate goal is to try and apologize to her brother for not having been present enough at points over their life and get him to safety, which is a very, I think, universal feeling.
Yeah, that's really quite the thing, isn't it? Taking a big movie with lots of big action, but focusing on something smaller, smaller relationships that really kind of get to the heart of what's going on in the movie, it seems.
Yeah.
So I love the background that you have on the side of a building.
Yeah.
I'm wondering how much time you actually spent on sides of buildings here, or is it all movie magic?
I spent a lot of time hanging off a maid building. So that was, it got to the point I was like, off I go again. Bye-bye, everybody. So that was a long time. It was this amazing set that was built, but it was high. So it was between 30 and 60 feet I was traveling up and down. And I'm not a huge fan of heights, so I was happy that it wasn't too high. But yeah, it was a lot of time. And then even things, because the practical things, when the cradle judders, practically it was doing that. So you do get the adrenaline jolt of, oh my God. And playing someone who literally feels like any movement they might fall off the side of the building is very tense.
Yeah, it's really amazing. I've done some wire work for local theater that didn't seem that high, that was like maybe 20 or 30 feet high and strapped in and everything. But it's scary up there. Yeah. It really is kind of scary up there.
Well, it's also interesting because there's such a... it's either a pulley system that is preset with the marks, and then you think, okay, a machine's doing it, okay. And then there were moments in the film, like when I drop, and before I suffocate a man, I was being held by two guys in the corner of the room, and then you think, the margin of error is so small that you are literally entrusting your life to, and I'd known the rigors very well by that point, but it's such a trust exercise to think, okay, I'm gonna put my life in your hands.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody has been asking, you know, what's the latest about New Jedi Order? Mm. Can you give us an update on that? What's the latest? What might we be expecting?
The update is that the amazing George Nolfi is on to write. Is an amazing writer, and he's in the process of writing, and I'm waiting for a script soon.
So it's going to be a while then.
I don't know.
Enjoy this. Enjoy Cleaner while we wait.
Thank you.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you very much, Daisy. It's always nice to talk to you. Hope you have a great day. Thank you.
There you go, Daisy Ridley. She is the star of the new movie that's called Cleaner. And as soon as they get this new Star Wars movie written, apparently she's going to be a part of it. But it's at least a couple of years away until we'll see anything on that regard. Coming up in just a moment, we go back for a page of musical history and one of the most classic folk songs of all time. Or in our next half hour, we're going to get into a little food talk. We've got Mardi Gras coming up. Fat Tuesday is Tuesday, of course, next week. Punchki Day. And I wonder if you have a favorite Punchki place in Chicago, or if you've got a favorite Mardi Gras recipe. This coming Wednesday on my TV cooking segment, I'm going to be doing a special New Orleans gumbo, which is one of my favorite things, and I'm going to cook that. So if you have a favorite New Orleans-style recipe, if you've got a favorite Punchki location, I would love to hear about it coming up here at 312-981-7200 is our telephone number for all of that. Otherwise, next week on the TV morning show, we've got some A-list interviews. Leighton Meester is a name that you know if you ever watch the TV show Gossip Girls. She's got a new show on the CW that's called Good Cop, Bad Cop. And we're going to talk with her next week on the TV Morning News. We're going to talk with former Everybody Loves Raymond star, Patricia Heaton. She's part of a new television series, and we're going to reminisce with her. We go back with her quite a ways, the days in Everybody Loves Raymond when we were, WGN was the Everybody Loves Raymond rerun station, the syndication station. So we spent a lot of time with the cast of the show. We went and visited their set and spent a day watching them, you know, making the TV show. We got to know the cast members, became really good friends with Doris Roberts, who played the great Marie Barone on that show. But, yeah, we'll do a little reminiscing with Patricia Heaton about that, and also talk about her brand-new project all next week on the WGN-TV Morning News. Right now, though, I wanted to go back for a little music history. It was on this day in 1940 that one of the classic folk songs of all time was released. The song, This Land Is Your Land, from folk singer Woody Guthrie. If you went to see this Bob Dylan movie, A Complete Unknown, you saw Woody Guthrie depicted in the movie. It goes back into sort of the history of folk music. But this song was poignant when it came out at the beginning of World War II. It was certainly poignant during the 1960s. And probably is pretty poignant right now as America tries to figure itself out. From this day in 1940, the great Woody Guthrie, This Land Is Your Land. All right. Well, we've got ourselves a little bit of an abbreviated show today. Andy, we've got college basketball coming up in a few minutes. Is that right?
We do indeed. Big Ten basketball. Indiana hosting Purdue. It's getting down toward the end of the regular season for the Big Ten. Wildcats are back in action on Tuesday night. They'll be at Minnesota, and we'll have that game at 5:45 on Tuesday.
And that's where Schwani is right now. He's taking off to be at the game.
Yeah, he's going to be the engineer for Dave and Billy in that game. It's going to be one of those that's going to be a miracle if it gets on the air. But when it does, it's going to be great.
I would love it if he did color commentary.
Could you imagine how many times he would say, I think that's fine.
That's fine with me. I like that.
They don't call him the best analyst in the business for nothing.
That's right. That's coming up in exactly 6 minutes. So we have six power-packed minutes to fill here on the program. And what better way to do that than with polka music? This is that clarinet polka that I told you.
Ah, okay.
I could burn a mean version of this on the Wurlitzer. I wonder if I could still do it. I haven't done it in 100 years. I wonder if I could still do it just from muscle memory. I'll have to give it a try. The main reason for this is because Punchki Day is just right around the corner. This coming Tuesday is Fat Tuesday. And that means that Punchkis are going to be all over the place. And, you know, I always like finding out where the best punchkis are, which bakeries. I know, you know, bakeries, people like line up around the corner to get into their favorite bakeries around the Chicago area for their best. I always like the Dinkles Bakery, but that's closed now.
Oh, I know.
It's been closed for a while. It breaks my heart because the big sign is still there.
That's the worst part.
Right?
You come down Lincoln Avenue, you're like, oh, I can pull. Oh, wait, it's closed.
They're closed. They've been closed for 5 years. It's like a pretty long time.
Yeah.
I love, people have been texting in some of their favorites already, and you can too. 312-981-7200 is our telephone number. Weber's Bakery is famous in Chicago. Weber's Bakery, Archer and Neva in the Garfield Ridge neighborhood. Says the 773 area code with the best punchkis in town. It says, I'm here in Indiana, but I come in. Now, somebody here on the 815 says Fat Tuesday is not this week, but it's the first week of March. Do I have my weeks wrong on this?
It's Tuesday, March 4th.
Okay, yeah. That's a week from. Yeah. It's a week from Tuesday. So I have a week to find all the good punchki places, and you know, I can eat as much fattening stuff as I want to. All the way up until then. I guess that's, now that I'm thinking about it, we're doing my TV cooking segment this coming Wednesday ahead of Mardi Gras, a week ahead of Mardi Gras, so that does make sense. I've got the dates mixed up. Thank you for the correction on that. March 4th is actually Fat Tuesday, but it's still, you know, a great time to start looking at some places ahead of time. In Jefferson Park, you ever been to Sweet Connection? Jefferson Park.
No.
It's a great place. Great bakery stuff there. They have bakery goods of all ethnicities there, also, by the way. Love that place. 708 area code says Orland Park Bakery has opened a second bakery, and they have the best punchkis, a new flavor every day. I like the strawberry myself. I'm old school punchki strawberry, fresh strawberries. I like the fresh. Let's see, what else do we have here? Best punchkis all around is a bakery. Best all around is Pitchick, P-T-I-C-E-K.
Hmm.
Pitchick on south Narragansett, south of Archer Avenue. Okay, all right. We have Kirsten's Bakery in Burr Ridge being listed here. And, yeah, lots of people reminding me that Punchki Day is not this coming Tuesday, but March the 4th. Got it. It's got the correction. Thank you.
February is so short, it messes everything up.
That's true. Is it a leap year? Is it not a leap year?
I'm
not even sure. But those are some places. Now, this coming Tuesday, I'm going to be trying, first time ever, that I'm going to be making New Orleans-style gumbo. You like the gumbo?
Not a big
look
fan,
at
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
See,
it's the fish thing. Yeah, it's
No. I have no fish in it.
Oh, no fish in that one. Okay.
No, mine is chicken and andouille sausage.
Okay, then I need that.
Yeah, chicken and andouille sausage. It's got celery, carrots.
Yeah, sign me up.
The usual, the holy trinity, as it's called. And it's very stew-like. It's served on rice. I think you may be thinking of jambalaya.
That's what I'm thinking of. Thank you.
Yep. Like shrimp and stuff like that in it. Andy is the picky eater on the show.
Very finicky.
Although he's getting better.
I'm expanding my horizons.
Getting better all the time. we're going to be making an authentic New Orleans-style gumbo this coming Wednesday. And that is this week.